Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, whose mission is to extend Christian ministry by caring for the whole person, body, mind, and spirit, and by working with others to improve health and quality of life in our communities. Now, here's your host, Ted Dotts.
Hello, I'm Ted Dotts, and welcome to Faith Matters. Our guest this afternoon is Davis Price. The Reverend Mr. Davis Price is pastor of Covenant Presbyterian Church. I've known Davis for a long time, past 30 years, and we've been through many events together. Davis, I'm so pleased you'd give your time and come here and visit with us. Now, a question I've had in my mind, wanted to ask you for all these years and haven't done it. You're a West Texas boy who went to Princeton and there for a while and then returned here. What kind of impact has that made on you to have filtered your West Texas life through Princeton and then back to Lubbock?
Good to be here with you, Ted. Well, in reality, it went from Princeton to Pittsburgh and then to Lubbock. And I think the thing that Janet and I have felt for all these years that we've been here is that we have returned, been called to our people. Frequently we talk about sometimes you're called to leave, but sometimes you're called to stay. And one of the examples that I give has to do with even our front lawn, which is xeriscaped, which we did 35 plus years ago, going off to somebody's ranch and getting choya and prickly pear and yucca and a number of other things. When you come back to a place like this, having been away, you see it with different eyes. Being away is a very important thing. I certainly knew these plant materials before we ever left, Jen and I having grown up in Canyon, but I didn't remember the flowers on the plant materials. And to see the prickly pear bloom, to see the yucca bloom, and to have that in our front lawn has been the very same sort of thing that we've seen in people. When you come back and look at a place that way, it's a whole new perspective. I'm glad for the time away. It has enhanced ministry by doing that, but it also is something in many ways rooted and familiar.
Davis, that brings to my mind a thing that's impressed me about you. You are very much what I think of as a Presbyterian. You have strong ways of doing things, the church order that you follow. And yet, in my years of knowing you, you've also been able to take stands that were not conventional. You seem to have about you the ability to see what a society needed, and they would step beyond or go against what's conventional. Do I have a correct assessment of you? And if so, how is it you're able to go against what's conventional?
I think you're probably right, Ted, and I believe there are two components to that. The first is one that I have just described, and that is to say, having left a conventional place, seen the world with different eyes, with different experiences, and coming back to it, one brings what in our tradition would be called a more prophetic stance. The other would be the Scripture itself. Every time that I go back to Scripture and begin to do the work of the week leading to the Lord's Day on Sunday, that Scripture always upsets my conventional ways of understanding things. Of course, that's a driving force for me. And there are many ways to understand Scripture conventionally. But if one goes to the heart of the gospel and looks at sort of having the nerve enough to really go where it goes, it's always counter-conventional.
But Davis, now that means that you're going to have experienced a lot of disapproval in your life, because I think you're right. The Scripture awakens us and sends us in fresh ways that are often startling. So if it's all right, how would you say you've managed disapproval in your life as a pastor?
Again, a couple of perspectives. One has to do with relationships. I don't believe that a pastor can do work without deep relationships with the people. And I have always counted on that in this congregation, loving, gracious people who are willing to grow with me as I grow. And those relationships are really the basis of anything that I say or do or ask them to consider. And that has to happen. I don't believe you can come in and pretend to have no relationship with people and be counterconventional. I think that's at the heart and the essence of it. People are willing to move with you in transformation, provided there's a relationship. Secondly, I think, is something that's very important, and that is to understand this is a particular role. In our polity, we understand that pastors, those ordained to the ministry of word and sacrament, are no different than any other member of the church except for function. So the church orders her life through having people fill this function. And if you understand that this is a role and a function that you are to carry forward, a ministry, a mission, then you have to learn at some point not to over-identify with it so that you keep some stance of being able to objectify it and know what's happening it and to you and to the people, so that there's at least a possibility of not holding on to everything so subjectively and having it tear you down.
Davis, thank you, especially for your word relationship and the way you've described that. But I would think that people, all of us, are very hungry for relationship. Indeed, I like to say, to be is to be with. How would you say that you're able to build a relationship, or what do you recommend for building a relationship? How do people engage relationally?
I think a lot of relationship comes from willing to be transparent yourself. And if you are willing to put yourself on the line, it invites the other person to do the same, to be able to take a risk in terms of truthfulness, in terms of pain, in terms of honesty, in terms of what matters to you and to the other person. It's very reciprocal. It is never one-sided. I can't go in and make a relationship happen, but I can go in and be a person who's open and honest and transparent enough with who I am that they're willing to share who they are.
I'd use the word vulnerability.
Yes.
And that's a risky thing. It's indeed the way I define faith matters. Faith being the risk we take to make life good. So when you come to being vulnerable or open, how do you handle that as a pastor? I mean, often we think we have to be very careful and closed. So how do you tread the path about being open, watching on the one hand confidentiality and what you know? Do you have a guiding light for being open or vulnerable?
Listening. It has to do with being able to listen to the other person and then knowing what of your own story you need to share at the time. It is not a matter of just going in and dumping everything of yourself out, but rather hearing the other person, what's on their heart and what's in their mind, and being able to relate to that from your own perspective and sharing what is appropriate.
Davis, that's so good. You bring up for me the question about what makes a good witness. My experience as clergy myself is the temptation always to tell some story or my story rather than listen. So after our break, let's talk a moment about how to make a good witness. We will be right back after a quick break. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotts. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, celebrating Covenant Heart and Vascular Institute. Since 1965, Covenant has brought together cardiac physicians, nurses, and professionals whose sacred mission is compassionate care for every patient. More information is available on cardiac care at 866-4-COVENANT. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotts.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ted Dotts with our guest today, the Reverend Mr. Davis Price, the pastor of Covenant Presbyterian Church. We have been mentioning the word witness, and Davis, I want to ask you, if I can, to get at this. The witness your congregation has made in your recent building improvements there, I think that congregation has made a huge witness in this community, and I'm not sure that's so well known, but I'd like to have your comment on it. Is that a witness, what you've done with your building?
It was intentionally a witness. Several factors involved in that. The first was this should be an energy-efficient building. It should be a building that fit in with the neighborhood and that had a footprint that was inviting to people and that opened the place up. That was the intention, to let the light in and to invite people in by simply having the place accessible. In the beginning, we started talking about efficient ways of adding on two rather large additions. We used a particular kind of wall system that had not been used in this section of Texas ever. And in fact, a factory representative had to come and help those who were putting it together learn how to install it. It's a very airtight system. It is in many ways, all you got to do is cut the windows in, and they have done that even at the factory. And as it fits together, using styrofoam, there is no thermal carry through from the outside to the inside because there's always a thermal block in the way. So this makes a very efficient system. In fact, efficient enough that the air conditioning units could be smaller. But engineers couldn't be convinced of that yet because this system had never been tried here. But we, in fact, invited a number of people, builders, construction folks, architects, and others to come see this as it was being erected. The other thing, of course, that is very clear about what we have done there is to be careful about water. And therefore, we have put in some arroyo-type places. They're called bioswales that capture the water runoff. It doesn't just simply send it to the street, but rather lets it pond and pool and become its own living little pond for a few days until it soaks into the ground. And this solved two matters. One had to do with water runoff from old parts of the roof, and the other is being sure that we have a way of xeriscaping in the area, which is what we've done as well.
I think of buildings. I got this from someone. We build buildings, and then buildings build us. What kind of person do you hope your building builds, their covenant?
I think in many ways a person that lets the light through and that is also a good steward of God's earth. That's very important here. Having grown up in West Texas, I find myself these days having great anxiety about water and about the long-term viability of this community, and even before this community begins to suffer that way, some of the smaller communities around us. That is a huge issue for us. It's one of those things that we talked about earlier about sort of being counter the conventional wisdom. We don't talk about it very much. It's been hard in some occasions to even get the conversation up there. And I'm glad to see at least within the last 6 months to a year, we've begun to talk a little bit more openly and more transparently about the future of this place and its water needs.
So if I said one impact that building makes on people is to lead them into conversation about what are ultimate matters, like water, for example.
Like water, like life itself.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Well, that leads me to another question. All the years I've known you, you've gotten yourself involved deeply in things that are beneficial to the community. Just one example is WTOS, West Texas Organizing Strategy. You were kind of moving force that even brought that in to Lubbock. It's been a force that got together churches, disparate groups of people, and they've taken some very important stands. How did you get that in your soul, in your character, to contribute that kind of effort to this community?
Interestingly enough, it only began after having been here 20 years. But on the other hand, before we ever left Pittsburgh, we were deeply involved in Industrial Areas Foundation organizing. And when we left Pittsburgh to come here, we were hearing about the modern-day IAF, which had just begun in San Antonio. But it was 20 years before we heard about it here in Lubbock, and a member of our congregation came to me one day and said, "We're trying to put together an organization." She knew about it. It was happening out in Carlisle area, and we're hoping that some pastors would be interested, and she explained a little bit of what it was, and then I think she was dumbfounded that I probably knew a great deal more about this kind of organizing than anybody around. So it was in some ways one of those reasons that we are called to stay here. God's call sort of opened up after 20 years and said, "See, now this is available as well, and this needs to happen for this community. So it's been a very interesting journey to watch as people have learned many of the basic skills of organizing, which are, by the way, not a great deal different than what we've talked about before: relational, storytelling, transparency, learning to take a public role. Those are things that are very important. And of course, the whole point of that organizing is so that folks who are ordinary folks, ordinary families in a town, can sit at the tables of power where decisions about their lives are being made. Normally, those decisions are made without reference to those ordinary folks because they have no voice there. Usually it's organized money that is making that decision along with political figures. What we say is that there needs to be a place at the table for those who are being deeply affected by these decisions to have their input and for them to know their own story and their own self-interest and represent them at this table where the discussion is going on about things that are going to affect their life.
Davis, I'm struck by you were here 20 years and then this opportunity arose. But I know in the life of pastors, there's always this possibility that you move. There are always opportunities presented or thoughts you might have. So although we're going to take a break in a moment, I'd like to ask you, suppose a young pastor, young woman or young man came to you and asked you about staying so long in one church and in one city. Would you be able to talk about the advantages or the disadvantages or the things that a young pastor should consider in regard to that? We will be right back after a quick break. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with our guest, Davis Price.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotts. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, celebrating Covenant Heart and Vascular Institute. Since 1965, Covenant has brought together cardiac physicians, nurses, and professionals whose sacred mission is compassionate care for every patient. More information is available on cardiac care at 866-4-COVENANT. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotts.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ted Dotts in conversation with my friend of a long time, the Reverend Mr. Davis Price, pastor of Covenant Presbyterian Church. And Davis, I've asked you if you suppose, having been here way over 30 years, a young person, young man, young woman, entering into being clergy and ordained, came and asked about such a long stay, what would you say to them were advantages or disadvantages?
The largest disadvantage that I can think of really is a matter of assessing or discerning if this is vital and good for the congregation. I think that's the piece that I would always put up there. In fact, has the congregation profited by, has it learned, been transformed by growing through this long-term relationship? That, to me, is the primary question to be asked in the realm of disadvantage. In terms of advantage, I think there's a great deal to be said about what can happen in the long term. In fact, you realize after a while that the church, like most institutions, changes very slowly. You know, when we look back over the history of the church, we talk in terms of centuries, not in terms of decades. And I think to be able to live with the people and to live through their life changes and your own life changes, their spiritual journey, your spiritual journey over that period of time, makes things happen that could not have happened otherwise. One of the things, you're from the Methodist system, I know, and one of the things I've always wondered about is that time of the year when there's sort of musical chairs and everybody gets reorganized inside a period of 2 or 3 weeks where somebody leaves and the new person's on board. And what's always struck me about that is that there's never any time left for having people grieve the loss of the person who has been there. And so the new person comes in saying, well, wait a minute, you know, they're ready to begin ministry. And the folks who have been there have said, well, we haven't even grieved the loss of the person who was here before you. That's a very difficult thing, I think, to have it happen that way. Long term, of course, means the people don't do that so frequently, but it also allows things to happen, to develop, for the relationship to grow even more deeply. I remember when arriving here, the executive presbyter who preached at my installation service talked about how it was to be between pastor and people, and how the pastor would have to, in fact, get to know the pastor with all his warts. So it's not just a matter of the good things, they know your warts as well. And I think that's true. But things can happen and change in the depth of that spiritual journey. I'm struck by the fact that while Jesus was itinerant in some ways, it was the same group of folks. When the prophets were with their people, unless they were sent off into exile, it was the same group of folks. We didn't see that much turnover in terms of their relationship with the people. I think nowadays it's probably likely, and you would know about this historically as well as I, pastors are some of the most long-term members of a community. Many years before, they were the shortest term folks, but now they tend to stay there. And I think the advantage is you get to know a community, its needs, its warts. You get to know a people and their needs. You get to learn yourself and understand who you are in relationship to them. And of course, it's part of my personality, I'm sure. I mean, our kids have joked with me over and over again about keeping everything forever, so that one of them took in a tool to be repaired to a retailer. He looked at it and said, "My word, I haven't seen one of these in 25 years. and I know it's built into my personality to stay with something.
Well, along that line now, Davis, I know what some spiritual practices you work there at Covenant. So if the young person asked you, "Reverend Price, what's a kind of core spiritual practice that you lead your people in and through?"
There are several. And one of the ways that I have described this, I mean, you've seen me make the presentation several times, has to do with the work of a man who was an Episcopal bishop in Tennessee, now deceased, I am quite sure. But he had the notion that different spiritualities predominate through different eras of the Christian faith and time. And we try to say in our congregation, we need spiritual practices that speak to these four basic preferences: a head spirituality preference, a heart spirituality preference, a soul spirituality preference, and a hands-feet spirituality preference. So we are very careful as we do our planning, and have been now for well over 20 years, to be sure that we allow offerings and opportunities for people to grow into their spiritual preference more deeply. So the different disciplines, as they pertain to these four areas, are available for people. You learn, first of all, your own spiritual preference, deepen it, but then there's always a growing edge, which is typically, if you think about a wheel and dividing it into quadrants or a circle into quadrants, it's the opposite quadrant. So we try to offer all those things. For me personally, obviously, in a Presbyterian tradition or a Calvinist perspective, typically the head spirituality predominates as a part of that faith tradition, but the growing edge would be across the way down in the heart and without words. So it's been very interesting since 1994 that we have been doing a more contemplative practice like centering prayer or walking the labyrinth, adding that to the repertoire so that people could find that part of their life enriched as well.
Davis, thank you for that. Now I have another question. I have known you and Janet way over 30 years, your wife. She was a teacher. She's deeply involved with you in the church and in the community work. Many people don't get the benefit of having a marriage that lasts and seems to nourish one another. Would it be possible for you to say to me and to our listeners something that you would think would help all of us with our relationships, especially in marriage?
That has a lot to do with the mutual sharing. And, of course, in understanding the person you married as well. I mean, it's almost like the church, one needs to have a good fit. It's much easier when there is a good fit. And certainly we have seen that with you and Betty. Where ministry is shared, where one's vocation is honored by the spouse, where one can participate in the other's vocation. Janet has certainly done that. She is an active member in our congregation, has been so for always because of her own background. And she values and honors the church and the faith tradition as much as I do. So it's very easy to include her as a part of the faith community. And that doesn't mean she does my job. It means she participates with other people as another member who's faithfully committed to the work of that congregation and to the work of the Christian gospel. It has been, you're right, a marvelous thing for me, and I hope for Janet, I think so, to be able to share this vocation.
I like what you say. It's been the same with Betty and me. It wasn't because I was pastor she was in the church. It's because she was committed herself.
Absolutely.
So one other question. I know a little bit about your children. You've had the opportunity to rear children, to parent children. Many people listening to us either are doing that or have done it. What would you say was the best thing you've learned about raising children?
For them to be their own people, to be their own person, for them to cut their own path through life, giving a foundation that perhaps we helped establish. One of the baptismal hymns that we sing when we baptize an infant is that this child is a gift from God in a while for us, but then this person returns back to God. I think that's a perspective we have to learn as we go on, because at first we think these children are all a reflection of us, and then sooner or later you realize they've got to be their own person. That certainly seems to have been the case with our children, and we're very pleased for them that they have found their person, their spouse, their place in life, and are doing it the way that God has called them to do it.
Now, if you and I got to carry on this conversation, I would say back to you, Davis, you just said something, the way I put this is to raise children is to help them to trust themselves as much as God trusts them. Davis, thank you. It's been a delight to visit with you. It's been a delight to know you all these years. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Ted.
Thank you all for joining us today. I'm Ted Dotts, and you've been listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1.
You've been listening to Faith Matters with your host, Ted Dotts. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, working to improve health and quality of life in our communities. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, a service of Texas Tech Public Radio.